news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 807. Sudden fascination here behind the scenes with those who wash windows.
On high rises.
Obviously, yeah. The story yesterday from downtown Mobile got our attention. We'll get around to that maybe after 8:30 or so. Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, the Washington Examiner. Good morning, Quinn. How are you?
I'm fine, guys. How are y'all?
Hey,
real quick.
Yeah.
Let's check with Quinn. Dalton and I are here like, okay, this window washer gets caught, almost falls, and MFRD.
I don't know if he almost fell.
Well, he was dangling.
He was dangling, but he was pretty secure.
So, I don't wish any harm on him, but it got me to thinking about window washing in particular, a very underappreciated talent, I think. And so, have you ever known anybody that did that kind of work, Quinn?
Actually, no, I haven't. But I've always thought that it looked a little iffy to me, and I've always sort of admired the courage of people that go up there.
I would agree. We're gonna dive more into this as we go along here today.
That's been the off-air topic of conversation for sure. Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, and the Washington Examiner. By chance, that window washer who was stuck is listening to us this morning. He probably missed all of the news yesterday as he was dangling off the side of that building. So, Quinn, the latest on Israel and American assist with the war in Gaza. Now you have, well, it's not new, but Hezbollah lobbing rockets over the northern Israeli border and then killing 12 on a soccer field over the weekend. That led to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu leaving the U.S. quickly to get back over there. There's a piece in the Washington Examiner this week. Netanyahu and Israel outclass the Biden-Harris-Iran axis. Explain this a little bit for us.
Well, Netanyahu spoke to Congress last week. If you didn't hear it live, it was a magnificent speech. He's a very good speaker. But, you know, whatever you say about him, you can say he's self-indulgent, that he's ruthless, that he, that he doesn't always deal straight with fellow politicians. But you cannot deny that he deeply believes in Western values. You cannot deny that he loves both Israel and the United States. He grew up. He spent a lot of his childhood growing up here in the United States. And he made an impassioned speech both for the existence of Israel and the right of Israel, that Israel is in the right, but also for Western values writ large. It was a magnificent speech. And our vice president, now presidential candidate, had the gall, the lack of class not to be there in what is an almost obligatory ceremonial role when the foreign head of state is invited to speak, which is very rare, to speak to Congress. Then the vice president, as head of the Senate, is supposed to be there standing behind him. And that the fact that she snubbed him is a disgrace. And, frankly, that alone should be disqualifying for her to be president, along with many other things.
Don, one of his coolest parts of that speech, which was, he is a very effective speaker for sure in several languages, but when he gave a shout-out to the frat boys at North Carolina for...
During that pro-Palestinian protest, they put the flag back up, right?
American flag back up. That's one of the, and I don't know if any of them were there, but it was quite a popular moment.
And
I loved when he mentioned the frat boys in North Carolina. We have an intern at the Washington Examiner who is a student at Chapel Hill, and as soon as I heard it, I sent him a chat note, and he said, "Yeah, you know, I was around campus that day, but, you know, when I sort of heard about it, I wish I'd rushed over there and joined those frat boys." But,
yeah, pretty cool.
It was wonderful that Netanyahu did that.
And there was a lot of hot rhetoric coming from the left before, during, and after Netanyahu's speech as well. Some, many who chose not to attend, but even some who did were very, very critical. I'm wondering, tying this all into the Democrats and their election prospects for November. Clearly, Kamala Harris is on the fence at the very least about providing Israel with more aid and assisting them in rooting out the terrorists in Gaza. And you can say that about a lot of Democrats, but her selection for vice president nominee, I know that Pennsylvania Governor Shapiro is one of those possibilities. How are they going to, if they even attempt to tie all this together and try to earn back the Jewish vote, if they even lost a lot of that in the first place, and will their stance, many of the left, their stance on Israel hurt them in November?
Well, it should hurt them in November. The Biden-Harris administration has been outrageously bad for Israel. They've had one good week where, in the immediate wake of the October 7th attacks, Biden sent an aircraft carrier and offered lots of strong support. Since then, almost all he's done is gotten in the way. He keeps trying to dictate tactics to Netanyahu, which, by the way, has had the effect of actually dragging out the operation. He's actually denied them weapons that are more precise, meaning that if he doesn't have the more precise weapons, it's tougher to get just the Hamas terrorists without having collateral damage. And I could go on and on, but the worst thing that he's done is his administration, the Biden-Harris administration, has been objectively subservient to Iran. They have released more than $10 billion in Iranian assets that had been held, which Iran then turns around and uses to fund Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis, among others, which attack Israel and the United and U.S. Personnel. And their end goal, as they keep saying, is us, not Israel. And yet we keep again and again and again, the Biden administration will not stand tough against Iran, and they are enabling Iran. And every single American, Jewish or otherwise, should be outraged at how objectively anti-Israel, especially Kamala Harris, is. You know, last thing I'll say here, did you notice how she, even after she met Netanyahu, she immediately started going into this moral equivalence act and then blamed Israel and said Israel has to stop this slaughter, basically. She didn't quite use those words. But after Hezbollah attacked the soccer field, she has still not said a word to denounce Hezbollah's attack that killed 12 Israeli children.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed about all this thing, especially after that last attack. No outrage coming from most Democrats, or maybe all. The choice of Shapiro, which seems like a logical choice in some ways, but it's not in this climate, because it would drive the pro-Palestinian wing of the party off the edge, right? They almost cannot choose Shapiro.
Well, you know what? I bet that in the end, most of the pro-Palestinian wing of the party would rally to her anyway, because they know that she is with them. She might as well be a member of the squad, you know, the left-wing pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel group out there. She might as well be a member of them. And eventually their voters are going to say, okay, do we want this lady, even if she's got a VP we don't like, versus Trump? And they're going to go for her anyway. So she's stupid to kowtow to it.
Okay. And while I think that, you know, the VP pick overall, I'm not sure it has as much an effect on the election as maybe it used to or ever has, but I think Harris, that team, they'll wait until this honeymoon phase of her being announced as the candidate kind of starts to wane before they choose that VP to maybe move the news cycle. Because, I mean, Quinn, all of the flip-flops we've seen from Kamala Harris, from her time in the Senate to her last, you know, however many years, three and a half years as VP. I mean, she wanted to ban fracking originally. Now she's saying she doesn't want to ban fracking. She's talked about national gun buyback programs. So many things that would actually hurt her in this election, especially with moderates and potential Republican swing voters. She's completely flip-flopped, and it's obvious to most people who aren't following the national media.
She is the single most left-wing nominee of any party in American history, by far, even worse than Barack Obama. Look, she's for banning fracking. She's for taking over one-third of the entire U.S. economy by Medicare for All, which is basically socialized medicine, and by the Green New Deal. Together, those two mean government would take one-third of the entire American economy. I could go on and on about how radical this lady is, and people should be really scared.
And one more quick one on Harris before we move on to what Biden said yesterday. Have you seen this, how they're kind of, well, they're segregating potential groups of voters in these Zoom calls to get everyone on Team Kamala? And they've done, I saw white women voters for Kamala, yeah. Which if we have time later this hour, yeah. I might play a clip of that.
That's kind of what Dale Jackson was talking about yesterday.
Yeah. And then white dudes for Kamala. Yeah, exactly. To me, all of these people who complain about racial divisiveness, to actually segregate your groups of potential voters on these calls, it's just so strange to me that's the party who's like, yeah, we're all for it.
Let's call it for what it is. This is racism. This is, look, I'm reading a biography right now by a very solid conservative former SEC chairman, Chris Cox, who's a friend of mine, on Woodrow Wilson, and about how racist the progressive Woodrow Wilson was. He was viciously racist. The progressive movement started as a very racist movement. Well, this sounds like it could come out of Woodrow Wilson in 1900 and 1910, this racial segregation, white dudes for Harris, white women for Harris, black women for Harris. Shut up about the race, okay? Stop talking about race. What happened to we're all one human race? These people have to divide everything up by race, by gender, by color, and it's sick. It's absolutely sickening.
Just take us back to 2008 or 2010. People following politics closely couldn't even identify what's going on today, could they?
No. I mean, to think how far we've come, meaning how far down we've come in dividing people up by mm-hmm. race, by gender, by sexual preference, by identity, by this, by that. That's not the America that I grew up in, when the whole goal was to get rid of the racial classification, the racial animus, and start identifying as Americans. How about Americans for Kamala Harris? Oops, you can't do that because she doesn't actually like America.
There you go. That's part of it. And, that was the goal of one Martin Luther King Jr., so I don't know where it's gone haywire, but it certainly has.
820 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. We'll continue our conversation with Quinn Hillier with the Washington Examiner and, of course, his work at quinnhillier.com. We'll talk with him after the break, including yesterday, the Biden announcement of what he'd like to see happen with the Supreme Court, and Kamala Harris also signing on to it. More on that on Mobile Mornings right after the break.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. President Joe Biden calling for major changes to the Supreme Court, including legislation to impose 18-year term limits, also enforce a code of ethics on justices. That just happened yesterday, right?
Yeah, he also proposed an amendment in opposition to the court's decision that presidents are entitled to substantial immunity from criminal prosecution. Quinn, interestingly enough, if this Biden term limit plan had been in effect the last two decades, and if each justice had served their full 18-year term, there would have been right now six justices appointed by Democrats and three by Republicans. What are your thoughts on this, which, again, with a House controlled by the Republicans, very little chance of passing?
Well, let me say this. I wrote a column on July 17th about this because we sort of knew what was coming. And Biden thinks he has a way, apparently, to do this by ordinary legislation instead of by constitutional amendment. You can actually argue that maybe there should be some sort of time limit or something for justices, but only if you take it to the whole country and let the whole country weigh in. And he's trying to do a sleight of hand by doing it by ordinary legislation, and that is flat out unconstitutional, and he knows better.
Yeah. Continue, sorry.
No, go on. You were going to say.
I was just going to say it's obviously a central plank of their campaign platform for Harris now going into November. Talk about the radicalism of the Supreme Court and how they stole abortion rights away from the country. That's what this is all about, right?
Yeah, it is. And of course, it's nonsense. I noted going into about the last 3 days of the term of something like, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but of something like 76 cases that had been decided up until then, it was either only four or maybe five had actually had a 6-3 conservative to liberal split, which completely explodes the idea that there's some sort of political partisan bloc on the Supreme Court, whereas the six conservatives are just jamming it down the three liberals. That's just wrong. Let me say one more thing, though. On the third Biden proposal, the constitutional amendment to basically undo the court's recent presidential immunity decision, let me just offer two words. President Harris. Now, if you're not scared of what a President Prosecutor Harris could do with the immunity that the Supreme Court has just granted the president, what she would weaponize the government to do against anybody she doesn't like, mostly conservatives, then you're not thinking straight. Biden actually is right that the court went too far, and the only way to, if a Kamala Harris wins and she has that much immunity, we got to really, really worry, which is why I'm all for constitutional amendment as long as it can be worded right.
Yeah, and of course, that would, like so many things, require Congress to actually do something, right? Even though I'm sure a lot are against that even being a possibility. But we really, everything seems to be done by executive action these days and not so much through the way it's supposed to be done.
Well, they should.
Well, the way it's supposed to be done is 2/3 of each House of Congress has to pass it and then send it to the states, and the legislatures of 3/4 of the states have to pass it. That means you basically take it to the whole country. And if you get the whole country's buy-in for it, good. That's fantastic. That's how a constitution should work.
That second proposal he had, a binding code of conduct for the Supreme Court, and of course this follows months and months of media reports with him coming after Clarence Thomas and a couple of other conservative justices. Basically,
yeah, all people outside his house.
This would put lower courts in charge of the Supreme Court's code of conduct when it's already supposed to be self-enforced, and they even changed some rules after some of the Clarence Thomas flight that he didn't have to tell them that he took this flight, but what would that mean if lower courts were in charge of the Supreme Court's code of conduct?
The specifics of Biden's proposal are just flat out stupid. Now, you can argue that a code of conduct should be out there, but the punishment still remains, and the only punishment should remain what's in the Constitution already, which is the impeachment process. If you have an ethics code that has penalties other than that, it's unconstitutional.
Quinn, out of time, real quick, sorry about that, but let everybody know where they can read your stuff.
Google Quinn Hillier and Washington Examiner, or go straight to quinnhillier.com. Thanks, guys.
You got it, Quinn Hillier. On the Supreme Court, among other things.
Yeah, a lot of information coming out these last couple days on the attempted assassination of former President Trump. And we'll play some audio from the local SWAT snipers that were on the scene.
Yeah, the Pennsylvania.
Yeah, right? The Butler County team. Also, this crazy story as the Americans have arrested one of the leaders of the Sinaloa cartel. I'm going to break that down for you. It's a wild story made for TV.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It's 8:34 on Mobile Mornings, the Nappy Award-winning Mobile Mornings, multiple Nappy Award-winning Mobile Mornings, and we appreciate that a lot. And we mostly thank you for listening every day, including right now. Thanks. This is crazy story out of England. Third child has now died. Eight others been injured in the United Kingdom after a 17-year-old carried out a stabbing spree at a Taylor Swift-themed dance class for young children. That is just so horrible. Mm-hmm. The constable in the town of Merseyside, it's Constable Serena Kennedy. She spoke yesterday.
It is understood that the children were attending a Taylor Swift event at a dance school when the offender, armed with a knife, walked into the premises and started to attack inside the children.
People said they'd never, you know, police officials said they'd never seen anything like that scene. The suspect, a 17-year-old from Banks, it's a village outside of Southport, has been taken into custody and is now facing charges of murder and attempted murder, according to police and authorities in Great Britain.
Yeah, and I think originally that suspect from Wales, and interestingly, the local law enforcement said the incident is, quote, not currently being treated as terror-related. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I can't imagine.
Maybe mental issues.
Maybe, yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, information continues to slowly leak out about what was known at the Trump rally before the shooting in Butler, Pennsylvania, just a couple weekends ago. And politicians, Congress, Senate, all coming together to try to investigate this further. Yesterday, House Speaker Mike Johnson, along with Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, unveiled members of a newly minted bipartisan task force to probe the assassination attempt. It'll be a 13-member panel. And it'll be chaired up by Republican Congressman Mike Kelly, who hails from Butler, Pennsylvania. He also represents the congressional district that encompasses the township. And co-chair, or the ranking member of that committee, will be Colorado Democrat Jason Crow. According to their plan, lawmakers on the bipartisan task force will work to uncover how the 20-year-old suspect managed to evade security and fire eight shots into the crowd and at President Trump, former President Trump. The stated objective of the panel is to figure out the security lapses of the rally, ensure accountability, and prevent a similar failure from taking place in the future. Also, apparently, New York Post reporting that Trump was briefly delayed by Secret Service agents from taking the stage at a Bitcoin conference in Nashville on Saturday because of what they're calling another security lapse. The holdup was caused by two individuals who made their way around metal detectors inside the Music City Center where this Bitcoin conference was being held. And Secret Service said in a statement yesterday that the two were, quote, credentialed and screened, but were removed from the premises because they didn't follow proper entry protocol. So they kept Trump from taking the stage at the Bitcoin conference because of a possible security breach. Everyone's wondering why they didn't keep Trump from taking the stage, or at least get him off of the stage, when plenty of people outside the rally in Butler knew that there was a suspicious character walking around. And now text messages that were put out to the media by Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley shows that officers had actually been suspicious of Crooks at least 90 minutes or around 90 minutes before Trump took the stage. And there's a group chat. Now, this is just with the local law enforcement that was on the scene. You had like a SWAT team from Butler County, and they're saying that prior to this event, they were having staffing issues and weren't sure they could get enough local officers out there to assist with security at the event.
The story we kept hearing was one guy didn't show up. I don't know, you know, but that's one. And all this information keeps coming, Dalton, and I'm looking at it. And I'm trying to figure out how much of this is consistent with what I've heard earlier. Some seems to be new information. Other pieces of information seem to be newly flushed out. But the story that one guy just decided he wasn't going to show up that day, or it was too hot on the roof or something like that.
And again, you know, there was so many different stories coming out. Remember, they said that there was a guy stationed on top of that building, but he came down because it was too hot.
Yep.
You had Secret Service Director Cheadle say that the building was too sloped. Of course, that ridiculous excuse. So this group chat message between these Butler County law enforcement officers around 4:36 p.m., one of the officers who was in that building that was connected to the building yep. the shooter ended up on top of, that yes. actually had a pretty good view of where he ended up being, mm-hmm. One of the officers was, his shift was ending. This was about 90 minutes before Trump took the stage. And he texted these other officers in the group message that the man, later identified as Crooks, had parked nearby their vehicle. Quote, someone followed our lead and snuck in and parked by our cars, just so you know. And this is that sniper, that counter sniper, whose shift was ending. And I don't have his name, but he spoke with ABC News about this.
We had a text group between the local snipers that were on scene. I had sent those pictures out to that group and advised them of what I noticed and what I'd seen.
What do you think is transpiring once you send in what you've sent in?
I assumed that there would be somebody coming out to, speak with this individual or, find out what's going on.
Yeah, he assumed that someone would come out and find this guy or talk with him. A follow-up message said that Crooks was about 50 yards from the rally's exit, sitting at a picnic table. Two other counter snipers responded with a thumbs-up emoji and responded, "Roger that," about 45
thumbs
minutes.
Thumbs-up like we see him?
Correct, like, "We've got your message, thank you," and then sent, "Roger that." About 45 minutes later, at 5:10 p.m., officers flagged that Crooks was on the move and had positioned himself near the American Glass International building, and then he later, of course, perched himself on top of that building to target the former president, and of course, he hit three others in that crowd, killing Corey Comparator. The picture they also had in that group chat, that everyone has seen that picture at this point, showed Crooks leaning against the AGR building with his, of course, it was him. He had this gray t-shirt on. Officer wrote in text message, "Kid leaning," or he wrote learning. I think he meant leaning. "Kid learning around building we are in. AGR, I believe it is. I did see him with a rangefinder looking towards the stage. FYI, if you want to notify Secret Service snipers to look out." The officer added, "I lost sight of him." A follow-up message said, "Call in to command and have a uniform. Check it out." So this was all going on before Trump took to the stage. I've just talked about it. The Nashville Bitcoin speech, they kept him from going up there. We heard Trump in a previous interview say, "Hey, if they would have told me to wait 5, 15, 20 minutes, I would have waited."
Of course you would have waited, yeah.
It seems that, at the very least, communication, which we've said for weeks now, was lacking between Secret Service and the rest of these local law enforcement teams that they had assist them. Jason Woods is leader of the Beaver County SWAT team. He said there was a meeting that morning that Secret Service didn't attend.
They blew it off.
We were supposed to get a face-to-face briefing with the Secret Service snipers whenever they arrived, and that never happened. So I think that that was probably a pivotal point where I started thinking things were wrong, because that never happened and we had no communication with the Secret Service.
So yesterday the FBI, along with revealing that Crooks had been for over a year ordering what they called gun-related purchases. Mm-hmm. And he was using an alias and also bomb-making materials, which his parents said wasn't out of the ordinary, as he had always kind of experimented with science projects, mm-hmm. kind of that nature. The FBI also revealed former President Trump has agreed to partake in a victim interview with the Bureau, which is pretty typical here. The FBI has interviewed more than 450 people, including dozens of Crooks' coworkers, family members, and former classmates. And then this video came out. I believe yesterday was the first time I had seen it. And because of the language, I can't play it on the air right here. It's at my Twitter page, at Dalton Orwig. And it shows a full 2 minutes and 10 seconds before the shooting began, a crowd of people who were right next to that building. And law enforcement had basically circled the building. They knew that they were looking for this suspect. Mm-hmm. They didn't know exactly where he was, but they were all looking on top of the building. The video later shows a barrage of gunfire and the crowd's reaction to Crooks being shot and killed. One witness, and this is explicit here, one witness commented it must have been a headshot because of the, quote, "big poof of hair." And you can hear in the background of the video Trump speaking to the crowd. You can hear him talking about the chart he's looking at and just chaos before the shots even ring out, keeping in mind that a direct line of communication you would hope would have alerted the people on the stage, the Secret Service up there, to get Trump off of the stage. It's the video really threw me for a loop, because you're looking for 2 whole minutes. Jeez. Before the shots ring out.
Incredible.
And local law enforcement is scrambling trying to get this guy. It's insane.
It's like, if you were to break it down, and there's a lot of pieces to all this, and more stuff keeps coming out. By the way, can I play this real quick? This is the guy that right now, I guess, is basically, he's the field officer, Kevin Rojak, in charge of this from the Pittsburgh area.
As part of our investigation, we examined over 2,100 tips from the public through our digital media tip line, including images, videos, documents, and audio recordings.
two things that stand out to me, and I'm certainly no expert on any of this. I'm just like all of you listening right now, following the story and just trying to piece it all together best that I can. A couple of things that were in play here. I don't know if one is more crucial than the other. The radio communication, not being on the same signal from local to Secret Service, that seems like that's something that should have been. I don't know, but what's the point in having radios if one group can't communicate with the other?
Yeah.
What do you do, hand signals?
Well, like that local sniper whose shift was ending, he assumed that when he said there's a weird suspect hanging out down here next to our vehicles that saw me walk out with my rifle, he assumed someone would look into that. I assumed that when you have a former president speaking at a rally that, you know there will be other local law enforcement involved, you would think the lines of communication would be crystal clear.
You would. So that's to my second point, the intensity of the mission. Doesn't it look like it's lacking?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did everybody come with their A game that day, just in terms of intensity? Now, you can have foul-ups, and they did. But it just seemed like it was, for some of these guys, like if one guy did take the day off, if that in fact happened, it just felt like there was a lack of being intentionally at your best.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put that in with anything else, you look at a ball team or anything else, they didn't come ready to play. Well, you know what? I don't think they came ready to play. Enough of them. And then the miscommunication and the Secret Service blowing off the meeting that morning, maybe they had their reasons. And were the best of the best there? We're reading up on that. No.
Mm-hmm.
Many more were at the Joe Biden event in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. And of course, with Cheadle, the Secret Service director, resigning after that abhorrent testimony in front of that committee. Was that just last Monday that happened?
Last Monday. You and I watching it together, not believing our eyes and our ears.
Well, after that, I think a whole lot of people said, well, that's that. They wanted heads to roll. A head has rolled, and a lot of people have moved on. And really interesting, we thought that this would, as crazy and violent and tragic an event as it was, that with the election coming up, that people would, use it as incentive to vote for Trump. Like, wow, I can't believe that he took that shot. He stood back up, but it's really kind of started to fade away. And a lot of that is it's not getting, A block coverage, but there's still national media that are reporting on this and the facts as they come out. I was listening to a podcast over the weekend, and it's a comedian, but he's really great with this stuff. He said he thinks it's just too dark of a story for a lot of Americans, and the implications of a potential assassination and who may or may not be behind it. It's just too much for people to look into. We have lives, right? You don't want to spend all of your day or the days when you're not working, the hours that you're not working, thinking about an assassination attempt on a man who nearly or at least half of America want to vote for to become the next president. And should Trump, should he make it a bigger part of his campaign, it's probably a good idea that he focuses more on central issues like the economy, like immigration, like international warfare that he's supposedly trying to keep us out of. But to kind of just move past this as quickly as some people have, to me, is still insane.
It's insane, but it's not unbelievable because of the slant of much of the media. Also, Dalton, remember that once we get into this full-blown, all-hands-on-deck campaigning, there's going to be a ton of ads on this radio station as well and on all the TV stations. Let's see how they play it, how they play Trump versus Harris, basically what it's coming down to. You can also include the vice presidential candidates. Right now, they're simply saying that J.D. Vance is a weird guy. That's the best they can do against him. He's a very articulate guy, I think a very thoughtful man, but if his politics don't line up with yours, suddenly he's just a weirdo.
Yeah, well, listen, we could say that about pretty much every member of Congress.
No kidding.
They are weird.
No kidding.
For wanting that. But yeah, I'm not saying something that everyone else hasn't already said, look at the people who are calling J.D. Vance weird.
Yeah.
And the things that they're into, or the things that they let slide. I mean, that is the party of weird.
Well, the party of weird is also a very fractured party. Maybe we can get into those separated Zoom calls. Have we done all of that? That's weird. Mm. You talk about weird. That's weird. It's 8:50 with Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings.
Thanks, Kane. 8:54, FM Talk 106.5 as we wrap up Mobile Mornings on this Tuesday. The segment brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Trey Bennett and his crew continue to do fantastic work on both sides of the bay, removing that junk. All you have to do is point. And 286 Google reviews now for 1-800-GOT-JUNK Mobile. All of them 5 stars, which is the best you can get. And, of course, you know, if you have big projects, 1-800-GOT-JUNK can come out and take care of that. But even the smaller projects that you maybe just don't have the time to get out and take care of yourself, or for some reason you're not close enough to get to that, they'll do that as well. This text or this review left by Kim 3 days ago said, called the 1-800 number. My small amount of stuff was removed the next day. It was removed from a storage unit, and I didn't even have to be there. So, you know, it's one thing when you have a big project that you're looking at and have 1-800-GOT-JUNK come out to take care of that. But even if it's not as much junk, but you just can't get to it or it's taking you too much time, they'll do that as well. You can call them. 1-800-GOT-JUNK is the number. You can also set the appointment up online just as easily at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
So we were paying tribute to the window washer on the, 33 flights up when he got entangled?
He was up 33 on the RSA tower. They sent the rescue crew up to the 35th floor and went down and got him.
Man.
After 50 minutes is when I think the rescue crew got up there and then took a few more minutes to get him up. Jared Cooper, the name of that window washer.
Wow. So I'm just kind of curiously looking at that industry. There's this one. He works for
Squeegee Squad.
Squeegee Squad. And that's actually a company that was formed in the Minneapolis area. A lot of glass to clean up in a big city like that.
We were talking about their football stadium, which is all glass. It's like a neighborhood of glass they have to clean.
It's like a week's worth of work, and then you do it all over again, I guess, if you have another game. But they've got about 120 offices around the country. Oh. So that's a very successful business, including here in Mobile. All-Star Pros, they're also in Mobile, I believe you can find them. Here's what they do. Window washing, window streak removal. Okay. Well, I should think so.
Yeah.
If you wash a window and you leave streaks, you haven't done the job. Here's the one that got me and Dalton. Window fog and cloud removal.
Oh. See, I was thinking they were going to remove clouds from the sky, but that sounds like if you have a cloudy window, they're going to take care of that.
Ah, okay. I misinterpreted that.
I thought they were getting into the weather. Yeah.
Window fog and cloud removal.
We'll make your day clear for you. We'll remove the clouds outside.
Yeah, and of course they replace windows and things like that too. So anyway, I just am now fascinated with the guys that go up and do this kind of thing, and I'm, you know, that what an occupation.
It's a great job for a spy, too. If you've ever seen any movies, they act like they're window washers. So they're not. Snoop on everything that's going on in the top floors.
Or if you just want to be a voyeur and check out stuff that's naughty stuff going on in the office.
That's the job for you.
There's always a chance that Emily and Ross are going to say, hey, what's up?
Yeah, that's what gets you to the top of the building every day. Coming up, the Jeff Poor Show on the way. He'll have State Auditor Andrew Sorrell. Let's see, Scott Dawson joining, and ALGOP Chairman John Wall. I'd love to get into, and maybe we'll have more time for it on a following day, the arrest of the Sinaloa cartel, one of the godfathers, El Mayo, real name Ismael Garcia. We'll see if they'll get El Chipotle or El cocktail sauce down the road. But El Mayo, he was actually, the first reports were that he was tricked by El Chapo's son into flying into Del Rio, Texas, so that he could be arrested by American law enforcement. Now they're saying that El Chapo's son, Joaquin Guzman Lopez, actually just kidnapped this guy. He brought him out of the mountains. This is a man whose picture hasn't been taken in decades.
Wow.
They're so secretive, of course, running the Sinaloa cartel. He flipped. His family flipped on El Chapo once he was arrested.
I got it.
So now El Chapo's family trying to get back at him, kidnap him after dragging him out of the mountains for a quote-unquote meeting, flew him into America. Now he's been arrested along with El Chapo's son, who may be getting a little more of a lenient sentence since he did this.
Wow. I thought that guy was arrested in Mexico, but that was on U.S. soil.
Yeah, they flew him into Del Rio, I believe.
8:59, Jeff Poor is straight ahead.